Hi, this is Chris Peterson, host of the Penny Forward podcast. The Penny Forward podcast is completely produced by blind-owned businesses, including Taylor's Accessibility Services. Find her web hosting services and accessibility consulting services at taylorarnt.com. That's TAYLORARND.com. Also, we appreciate you listening to the Penny Forward podcast. If you appreciate us, we hope you'll consider providing a small donation to our tip jar to make this podcast possible. It only costs a small amount per episode to produce the Penny Forward podcast, and your assistance will be greatly appreciated. Again, thank you for being a Penny Forward podcast listener.
Welcome to the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Join us now as we get to know people like us who are working towards their own success. Here's your host, Chris Peterson.
This is a special 20th episode edition of the Penny Forward podcast, where we are not necessarily talking to the Penny Forward community, but we are letting the Penny Forward community talk to financial professionals about what we would like them to know about working with blind clients. And assisting me with this podcast, which is being recorded through Clubhouse, is Liz Botner. And Liz is going to help me because I'm not able to use speech while I'm doing the recording. She's going to help me make sure that everybody gets recognized as they come in and want to speak. Liz, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. Good evening. I'm Liz. I am really bad at introductions, but yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Hello, and thank you very much for assisting with this recording. Shall we go around the room, so to speak, and have other people introduce themselves so that we know who's on stage?
Are we introducing Kelly? Because she's on stage.
Sure. Hi, everybody. Fantastic. I'm Kelly. I'm Chris's wife, and I am not visually impaired, but here to support, and I'm very excited for you guys to be a part of this.
Thank Marana.
You. Hey, yeah, I am Marana. I am visually impaired. I live in California, work for a couple of funeral homes, and just think this should be a very interesting discussion. I'm excited to participate and learn as well.
Next, we have Taylor.
Hello, everybody. This is Taylor. You guys may know me because I am the proud web host of Penny Forward, and I help sponsor the show. So I really love this show, this podcast. Awesome. I love what Chris is doing, and I'm a website developer, WordPress professional, accessibility consultant, and yeah, I own my own business. So I'm based out of Michigan.
That is all we currently have on stage. I guess in full disclosure, I should provide a better introduction of myself. I'm Liz. I am a blind rehab professional, and yeah, I don't know what else to add. And I play blind ice hockey, because it's fun. Anyway, that is all of our stage people at the moment.
Okay, very good. Well,
welcome everyone.
Thank you. So the first topic that I would like to cover this evening is access to cash. Currency in most of the rest of the world is accessible in some way or other. And while coins are pretty doable as a blind person, working with banknotes, i.e. dollar bills, etc., is not. But there are workarounds. And I think it would be good to start out by explaining to people what those workarounds might be and how somebody that's helping you with your money, especially your cash, can make that process more comfortable for all of us. Marana, would you like to start?
Sure. I mean, definitely some currency in an accessible format would be nice to be able to identify it easier. But I think it'd be helpful. I mean, simply being at a bank, and if a teller is counting money back to you, to do it in an organized way so that, you know, you have all your 20s on the bottom, maybe separate it, maybe help you, you know, separate it into envelopes or whatever, and help you to identify them and stuff. But just making sure that you're really aware of what you're getting, and helping to keep it organized from the get-go and such.
Taylor, any thoughts?
Yeah, so definitely having your money organized from the get-go is something that's very important. I've had it sometimes where I go to the banks and, for example, there may be some weird thing that happens, or maybe you're in a rush, or, you know, maybe the teller, who knows, maybe they don't give it to you in an organized manner, even though you tell them to. So what I tend to do is, if for some reason I can't get the money folded or it just doesn't work, I go home and then immediately I make sure that everything is in place so that when I need to use cash again, you know, when I go back out to purchase something, I can do that. And so I have a few apps that I like to use for money identification. And, you know, there's definitely ways that we can definitely be helped by that. So hopefully that helps people.
Rod, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, like Taylor, I do use apps to identify my money. I did use Looktel for a long time, and I started using CNAI because I like the shortcut feature, you know, just to hold down the button, say, Siri, identify my money. I do live in Alabama, but I am a Canadian citizen and visit Canada still regularly, and I do like how they have Braille on their money. They don't really identify it with traditional Braille. They just have one full cell for $5, two full cells for $10, three for $20, four for $50, and five full cells for $100. And I kind of like that.
Thank you, Rod. The second topic I'd like to talk about, because I think this is really important to a lot of us, is paperwork. Sometimes you can't avoid it, and yet there's a lot of paperwork, particularly when opening accounts, dealing with loans, or working with investment accounts. So let's talk about dealing with paperwork. In an ideal world, how would you like to deal with paperwork associated with your financial accounts? Taylor, let's start with you.
All right. So in an ideal world, I would like to have all paperwork digitized. That way, I can kind of do it online, or I can have access to it instead of dealing with a lot of paper nonsense and, you know, trying to figure stuff out. So in an ideal world, we want it to be digitized so that we can access it on our devices, and that way we can have more records rather than just like a paper folder.
Rod, what if you can't have it digitized? How is it easiest for you to work with actual paper?
You know, that's a tough question, because I do like electronic copies. I like to run a completely paperless workflow for work and at home. And I think online accessibility is very important. And thankfully, I've used a lot of different banks in both the United States and Canada, and most banking apps work really, really good. If I had something that I think that could improve upon, I think with the CDs and maybe IRAs, I'd like to see an easier way to get the annual percentage return, because I do struggle with finding that with some of my investments. So I'd like to have it simplified so I could get the information easily.
I'm glad you talked about investments, because charts are a big deal in investments. And oftentimes that's the way an investment company wants to display things. It works really well visually. It doesn't work so well non-visually. And yet there it is. So that's an excellent point that you brought up, and I very much appreciate it. Miranda, what are your thoughts on paperwork?
The biggest thing with paperwork for me, of course, is trust. I mean, you definitely have to trust the person that, if we're dealing with actual paperwork, of course, the digital stuff is important, I think would be number one, but they've covered that well. So if we have no option, if we're left to just the old paperwork, being able to work with somebody that you trust, and if you have to, even being able to have another person that would verify that your information is being read to you accurately, that they're fully explaining everything. We have like seeing AI and those other things, or you could use IRA or one of those, allowing you to have somebody that can double check it and stuff, and just really explaining things thoroughly so you know exactly what you're signing. And then, you know, privacy is also an issue. And again, it all comes back to trust. So it's very nerve-wracking to have to deal with another person, especially somebody that's not close to you, whenever you're giving out a lot of private information. So just my main thing would be trust and being able to have another person there or some other way to verify that you know exactly what you're getting into and you know exactly what you're signing. And then as far as like investments and stuff go, a lot of the sites and stuff like that are out there are not very accessible, or I have found, you know. And so maybe having them be educated on, or you at least being willing to listen to you whenever you're saying, hey, you know, this one is great, but this needs to happen, or it really can't work with it, and being willing to work within those parameters of what actually works for you.
Yeah, all good points. Victor, you're just joining us. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, nothing really to add. I certainly try to do as much as I can electronically. I really like it when companies or financial companies can send me documents through DocuSign or Adobe to sign for signatures. I think that's a really big step forward that I've seen some companies do lately, and I really appreciate that. Again, just as it's been said already, trust is important, especially when you're a blind couple like my wife and I. You know, it's not like you have a trusted person right there, or a spouse that can read stuff to you all the time. So we do have to rely on other people. So yeah, definitely having somebody that you can go to that you know will be honest with you. And then yes, double checking it with the apps or IRA, I think is a good step.
Thanks, Victor. I really think trust is important, and to financial pros that might be listening to this, I think you already know that trust is important to your clients. You know, you're working with potentially very large sums of money on behalf of your clients, and you could lose your licenses if you break that trust. But in the case of those of us with visual impairments, there's a lot of information that is even harder for us to access. It's not even fine print. It's print that's not even there at all in some cases. And so it's probably good to overshare information about the products that you're helping your blind clients with, and give them the time to really digest the information in a way that helps them to make good decisions. I think the next topic that I'd like to talk about, because I think this is really important, and it has a little bit to do with finance and a lot to do with just who we are, is that we all have our own different hopes and dreams and goals, and by and large, we're pretty normal. But there may be some things that are kind of unique to being blind that may make us think about things in a different way. And I'm curious to know, Marana, if you have any thoughts about how having a visual impairment changes your idea of what your goals are financially.
I mean, obviously, a large part of the blindness community relies on SSI or SSDI. And I think that for a lot of us, that's our number one goal, is to break free of that and not have to rely on it. And being able to not just be able to get off of it by the skin of our teeth, but actually to be able to flourish and to be able to have that money to tuck away and to save, and so that we can live comfortably as well, and not just feel like we're constantly just scraping by. And so that would be my thing, is that not just being able to have a plan that works for us in regards to being able to put away, but something that will allow us to be able to put away enough and do it in a way that will allow us to be comfortable and to thrive on that, rather than just barely making it.
Yes, exactly. And some of us are employed and have broken off of those programs. And yet being employed can sometimes have its own stresses. Liz, do you have any thoughts about that?
Sure, yeah. But I also just wanted to mention that our hopes and dreams are, for the most part, I would think, the same as those of any of our sighted peers. And I say that because a lot of times there is this kind of a stereotypical, here's what sighted people want and need, and here's what blind people want and need, and it's all the way over here, and there's no intersection at all between the two, but that's not the case. Yes, there are differences in terms of maybe we need to think about different things in terms of having monies available for assistive technology or transportation or whatever it might be given our certain situations. But I do want to reiterate that we're just like anyone else. We just, our eyes don't work as well or at all.
And Aaron is just joining us. And Aaron, do you have any thoughts to add?
I think I'm pretty in line with what Liz just said in terms of for myself. I'm in my 30s. I'm working on home ownership. And I think my relationship to financial goals is really just sort of breaking free of that scarcity mentality that you can acquire as a blind person when you're on SSI or when you're underemployed, and just learning how to think about even how to use money towards goals and towards fun things and towards things that I want, just as opposed to just kind of always being on that perpetual ladder of anxiety that you could get from underemployment.
Thanks, Aaron. Victor, how about you?
Well, I think Aaron hit it right on the head. Underemployment is probably the biggest problem in our quote-unquote community. Unemployment or underemployment, and that scarcity mentality, as has been said, I think if we can address those causes and we get people having a living wage, then that really goes a long way to making people feel like they can attain the goals that everyone wants to have, you know, to travel, to own their house, even to own a driverless car one day. I mean, that's really important. And I, for myself, don't have any different goals than anyone else does, really. I just allocate some things a little differently. Instead of a big screen TV, maybe I'll get some assistive technology, but you know, that's all.
Rod, any thoughts to add?
I think the biggest thing is the unemployment rate. It's sometimes hard for some blind people or low vision folks to have the same type of financial goals as their sighted peers, just because we don't have the same employment options as a lot of other folks. I have RP, so my financial goals have kind of modified with my age, because my RP has slowly taken away my vision, and I think my financial goals have changed, not because of my eyesight, but just because of my age.
Thanks, Rod. And I want to make sure she doesn't think we have forgotten about her. So Taylor, I think you have an interesting story having to do with job loss and how that impacts your thoughts about finances and what you do as a blind person.
Yes, basically, for those who don't know, I lost my job at a local university in the summer of 2020. And I was at this job helping students and departments with web accessibility compliance and technical support assisting students who are blind or visually impaired, or even who have other disabilities. So obviously this job loss wasn't, you know, my fault, because it was based on a budget reduction of 20% by the university because of COVID. And I could have easily just said, oh, I'm just going to sit on government assistance all day and I'm not going to do anything. And I'm just going to, you know, whatever. I could have easily did that, but I decided accessibility was more important than ever, right? Because we have this global pandemic at the moment. And at that point, you know, there was a lot going on. So I'm like, well, my whole family is pretty much business owners, so I might as well just join in as well. So I started my own company. And, you know, like I said, obviously it's been, you know, a little crazy. It still kind of is in some regards. But definitely business ownership and self-employment could definitely help people if they have the motivation and the drive to do it.
Very good. Thanks, Taylor. So I think I'd like to close with thoughts on investing. And this could be anything from why we think investing is important to what we would like to know about investing to what causes us to shy away from investing. In my view, investing is something that can really help a person who's blind to weather tough times, like a job loss or an illness. And so I feel that it's really important, and I do a lot of it. Anyone have any thoughts about that? Maybe Victor, I'll start with you.
Well, definitely very important to live within your means and to set aside money each month to save or invest. Case in point, my wife has just become quite ill and we've lost her income. And fortunately, you know, I had several thousand dollars set aside, and, you know, it's not going to be that much of a hardship yet. I mean, that might change down the road, but, you know, we have time to figure stuff out. And that's what savings and investments will buy you, is it will buy you time in retirement, or buy you time when you have that crisis that comes up and you lose your job, or a family member is sick, and, you know, you have those 6 months or a year's worth of expenses hopefully saved up, so, or invested where you can get to it, or where you can get to it later in life to enjoy some of the things you want to do. So very, very important to be able to do and to live within your means to have that percentage of your income, whatever it is. Even if you have a small income, still put something aside so that you have that nest egg to rely on.
I think it can be really, really important for a lot of reasons, and yet very few of us start it as early as maybe we could. And maybe that's because of it being intimidating. Maybe it's not on our radar yet for whatever reason. Who knows what the reasons are. But Taylor, do you have any thoughts about investing as a younger person?
Yeah, I would say, like I said, it's definitely a very important thing. And I'd say another thing that could shy people away about it is that they may be afraid about SSI in investment. And so that could be another reason why people may not start investing when they, you know, when they would like to, because SSI and other government benefits programs that people rely on require that their asset limits be so low. And so I agree with Victor as well, and that saving, you know, ABLE accounts. And I believe Chris has some resources on his site. And so I think it's always definitely a good idea to live within your means and to save, because, yeah, that way you can have money whenever a crisis comes up.
Yeah, Taylor, and I'm glad you mentioned ABLE accounts, because I'd like any financial pros that are listening to go out and get educated about ABLE accounts. It's something that blind people really want to know about. And it, in my experience, is something that financial advisors are not as educated on as they could be. And you could really find yourself becoming a trusted partner for people if you become an expert on that.
We'll get back to our interview in just a moment. But first,
are you interested in investing, but the jargon has you lost? When you're in an unfamiliar financial environment and need a hand in understanding the lay of the land, Penny Forward is here to help. We provide affordable one-on-one and group education financial programs that help you get out there and achieve your goals. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do.
Do you have a short success story that you would like to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
Miranda, as someone who has become blind later in life, how does that change your view on things like investing?
You know, I don't know if it's because I became blind later in life or if it's just because I've gotten older and wiser, hopefully wiser, but just in recognizing, you know, that we do need to have a plan for the future. And, you know, I lost my sight when I was 25, and I don't know very many 25-year-olds that are really thinking about investing. Even with my family, it's not something that I really learned through them. And it's just now something that I've started, you know, investigating and looking into, just because I think it's wise for us to have a plan if we don't want to be completely dependent upon the government. And I think Taylor is very correct whenever she talks about, you know, like SSI and the fear there, because what is it you can have to your name? Like you can't have over $2,000 total at a time. I mean, that doesn't leave much of an option for, you know, putting much away. And so, you know, I think that for me, the what would be helpful is just somebody being willing to explain all of the options and which are the riskier investments, like what maybe is a safer way to go about it, to kind of get your feet wet and move in slowly and become comfortable with it, become familiar with it, and to be willing to educate on, okay, this is what could happen here, this is what could happen here. Yeah, I'm sure that applies to everybody, though. Not everybody walking around there is a stockbroker. Not a lot of us know unless we've really been in it. So that's one thing that I would say is just be willing to educate and be patient and to really have a good grasp on what would probably work best for us. Because whenever you don't have a lot to lose, those investments can get a lot more scary.
Thanks, Miranda. Rod, we haven't heard from you in a while. Any thoughts to add?
You know, I think I agree. I think education is the key. I'd like to see VR counselors put a little bit more focus on financial education in all aspects, not just investment. And I think there's some programs out there that allow you to save more than $2,000 if you're saving for a car or some or education. I wish I knew the details, but I think that goes to my point that I think we need to educate the community a little bit more about finances.
Thank you, Rod. Marco joined us a little while ago, and we haven't heard from him yet. Marco, do you have any thoughts you'd like to add?
Yes, good morning, everybody. I completely agree with everyone else's sentiments. The only other thing I would add as well, and I found this just through various communication and dealing with in my sort of field, which is accessibility, is that a lot of blind and vision impaired people, unfortunately, haven't got what I would call suitable education. And what I mean by that is some people unfortunately fall through the cracks in getting education, you know, full education in terms of writing, in terms of, you know, public speaking, in terms of all sorts of things which are important to push one forward. And I think that that's one thing that a lot of people don't focus on is actual education, not just financial education, but education in general. So I just wanted to add that to the mix whilst we're talking about this topic, which I find very, very interesting.
Thank you, Marco. I appreciate you being here, and good morning to you. Aaron, any thoughts from you?
One thing that I find lacking as someone who did start investing fairly young towards retirement as soon as I had a job is just good ways of understanding trends. You know, even things about balancing my portfolio are usually represented as a pie chart or performance over time. I find it very difficult to surface that information, and I'm often kind of relying on someone else's interpretation. So just being able even to pull things into an Excel spreadsheet where I can work with numbers in ways that they're work with numbers in ways such that I can manipulate them and understand them better is something that I find a bit lacking and would love to see more financial professionals putting resources towards.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Aaron. If someone told you that a particular investment had a return of 10% over the last year, and maybe over the last 5 years, it had an average return of 7%, and over the last 10 years, it had an average return of about 4%. How would you like that presented differently so that you can process it better?
Mainly, I would just want to read it either in an HTML table or an Excel spreadsheet. I'm someone who is very kinesthetic when it comes to numbers. So if you're speaking to me about numbers, by the time you get to the third one, I've lost the thread a little bit, whereas if I just have them written down and I can read them over and, you know, because probably, okay, you've told me about the performance of one account, but maybe I'm deciding between six options to put my Roth IRA in. And so I sort of need to sit with those numbers and be able to compare them and, you know, evaluate, okay, well, this one sounds good in the short term, but this one actually did better in the long term. And I think sighted people can do really quick kind of visual comparisons. Yeah, even when I go onto some of the investment sites that I use, there are comparison tools that will generate a visual graph. and compare one option to another. And I need ways of doing that. And for me, the way that I work with numbers in my work life when I work on budgets is through spreadsheets and tables. So that's really what I find that I want with my financial data. How universal that desire is in the blind community, I have no idea, but that's what I want.
Well, thank you. Any thoughts from anyone else?
This is Victor. How about the possibility of tactile graphics? I don't know how useful that is or how accustomed people are to accessing those for graphs and pie charts and all that. I mean, I love them, but I'm not sure what other people think and what their experience is with those types of tools.
That's a good point. Anyone have experiences with tactile graphics for reading complicated charts?
This is Rod. I have a little experience working with the National Career Readiness Certification with their graphic literacy tests. And I find those complex charts and graphs difficult to understand. Granted, I'm a fairly new Braille reader. I learned Braille in my 30s, but I struggle with the complex graphs in Braille. I do prefer an Excel spreadsheet and just annual percentage rates, 5-year return, 10-year return, etc. I do like it in a descriptive form.
Well, thank you, Rod. Any other thoughts on any of these topics?
I was just going to mention that Liz had said something earlier about making sure that things are accessible. And one thing I found is that a lot of places now are going to DocuSign, and DocuSign actually supposedly is accessible. I've used it a number of times and find it still to be, at least signing your signature and stuff, it's completely inaccessible. So either hopefully DocuSign will fix that so that institutions can, we can actually do it independently, or maybe there'd be another solution.
And when you're talking about signing, you're talking about actually having to draw your signature into the form, right?
Correct. I've not found that to be accessible at all.
Neither have I. And it's interesting to me that some DocuSign forms just have a button that you press to say sign here, while others make you draw it in.
My experience with DocuSign is limited to forms that have the button. So yeah, I haven't experienced the drawing.
Yeah, more and more places are going, especially because of COVID. I know, you know, as a funeral home, that's how what we did with all of our families. And, you know, we did have some blind individuals that we worked with. They're like, I don't know how to do this. It's not working. So just people be aware what, you know, there is a solution there, and to try to use that solution as much as possible.
Hey, this is Rod again. I've had a lot of trouble with the signing as well. I found some of the documents I had to sign on the PC inaccessible with JAWS, but then I brought it up on the iPhone and toggled VoiceOver off and signed my name on the screen and toggled VoiceOver back on, and it did accept it. I don't know how my signature looked, but at least I got through the process.
Has anyone dealt with, say, UPS or FedEx or someone that's coming to do work at your house and you have to sign for whatever it is on a tablet that they have? I always find that to be an interesting experience. And one of the things that a guy recently told me was, you know, most people just run their finger across the screen in a line. Here I am trying to draw up my signature and getting frustrated because the screen is slippery and my finger feels like a big sausage that I'm trying to sign with. And here he tells me, yeah, most people, even if they can see, they just draw a straight line.
Yeah, I've heard that no matter how hard you try, it's never legible. It never really looks like a signature.
I have to sign Elliot in and out of daycare on an app every day, and I just run my finger across it. I don't sign it.
I broke the UPS guy's tablet, so he now doesn't ask me to sign it anymore.
And now, for the rest of, I could do a whole podcast on this, just stories of things that Mark has broken.
No, seriously, the guy, whenever he comes to my door, he stands about 6 feet away and says, I'll sign it for you. Like, okay, that saves me breaking your tablet again. Which it kind of helps, because it means if I'm not around when he delivers a package, then he just sticks it in the safe place, signs it, and we're all good. And he usually bumps into me in the local town and say, I left your package and a sign for it, but don't tell anybody. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. But yeah, poor guy. He now has a military grade case on his tablet, which he didn't have the first time he came.
That is funny. You know, if people are interested in this conversation, we could continue it on for a little longer if you want. A topic that occurred to me as we were talking is transportation. It used to be that when you wanted to go and see someone at a bank, you actually had to go to the bank. Or if you wanted to talk to your financial advisor, you went into their office and sat in a conference room or in their office or whatever. And I think for some people that might not have been a big deal. For others, that might have been a barrier to good financial services. Anyone have any thoughts about transportation?
I do. This is Taylor. Yes, I think transportation could definitely be a barrier, but I'm super thankful for like Uber and Lyft and all that fun stuff. Yes, it can be expensive, but you know, it's almost like car expenses, you know, like car insurance and, you know, filling up your car with gas in a sense. You know, Uber and Lyft can be expensive, but so is like owning a car.
Thank you, Taylor. Anyone else?
I think that, you know, like with a lot of people use paratransit, and with those usually, you know, there's an appointment that you have to set up, and it would be helpful whenever you do have to go into the bank or wherever to do that to make sure that the appointment time is honored and that you're out of there in a timely manner so as to not miss your pickup and stuff. And yeah, Uber and Lyft are always available. I did find that whenever COVID was going on, the prices where I was at, so one of the Uber drivers told me, you know, I tried to get an Uber and it would say, oh, we're trying to find your driver, and it would wait and then say, oh, the price has just gone up to this amount. Do you agree? You know, okay, I agree. Well, he told me that they were actually setting their own prices. And there was a couple of times that I went no more than like 10 miles and ended up having to pay $40 for the trip. You know, it can't be, transportation can definitely be an issue. I mean, fortunately it's not that way. And hopefully we're coming out of that time right now, but it can be a problem.
I use one designated taxi driver all the time. The reason for that is because where I live, they've closed down a lot of the banks and it's just cash machines, and although some of them do have headphone inputs where you can put in a 3.5 mil jack and listen when you're trying to take cash out, you don't know who's standing behind you. Now, you don't assume that people are going to come up behind you and try and read over your shoulder or steal the money when it comes out the slot, but you're never quite aware of who's around you. So I use one taxi driver all the time, and I schedule appointments around his shift pattern. So when he's on, I use him, and therefore I've built up a friendship with him, and I've got an element of trust, you know. And like, for instance, we'll go to the pub together. His wife and I and friends will all go to the pub now, so we've got a good bond there, and it's cool because, you know, you could schedule a paratransit. We call it dial-a-ride here, which sounds really dodgy, but I don't use it because it goes all around the houses, and to go like, you know, 6 miles to the next town can take at least 3/4 of an hour. And if you've got schedule, if you've got a plan, you need to be somewhere, and you just want to stop in at the bank en route, then that's adding a fair chunk into your day. I'm lucky in the sense that even though I'm rural, we've got a pretty good public transport set up here with buses and trains. And the staff on these trains and buses and the stations are always really, really obliging. So, but if I have a designated appointment at the bank, then it's a taxi driver. And if he's not on shift, I just move my appointment to the day that he is on shift.
Thanks, Mark. I actually prefer banking at home and even prefer choosing financial advisors. And, you know, like my financial advisor actually came to our home and met with us at home every time we met with him. I think we were in his office once. And now we meet with him over Zoom since COVID started. But my preference is to do things from home whenever possible, because transportation can be kind of a pain, especially when I'm working and I don't have time to wait 10 or 15 minutes on either side of a ride, on either side of an appointment for paratransit, if I'm lucky, or for an Uber or Lyft, or work around a bus schedule where a bus might run once every half an hour. My schedule is too tight to be able to make that practical most of the time. Does anyone else have a bank from home preference?
Oh, I do as well. Yeah, whenever possible.
Yeah, this is Chip, and I'm sorry I'm a little late to this room, but yeah, I've been banking only online for maybe 20 years now. We're using Citibank primarily at the moment, but it seems to have worked out really great. I don't need a local. I can't see why I've needed a local branch of a bank or a credit union, and so I haven't for 20 years. I also wanted to chime in on something Taylor said, which is where I came into the room. The last year I have data for, which is maybe 6 years ago, the cost of car ownership in the U.S. was about $9,000 a year. So you can get a fair number of Uber rides for that.
Yep.
Well, thanks for joining us, Chip. Anyone else have any thoughts?
This is Liz. I, too, prefer to bank at home when at all possible.
Thank you, Liz.
Hey, Chris. This is Rod. I do, too. The only trouble I have is trying to take a good picture of deposits for checks. But fortunately, I am not too far away from Regions ATM machine. And I find making deposits with the ATM machine with checks very easy. It tends to pick up the check amount, so I don't have to input it. And it's a lot easier than trying to get that check in the viewfinder.
Thanks, Rod. Any other thoughts from anyone on stage?
Hey, everyone. This is Al. I'm coming in late as well, but I also bank from home. I use a credit union right now, and I don't know if there's been any discussion in terms of banks versus credit unions and pros and cons, but that might be an interesting topic at some point.
It's outside of the scope of this, but yeah, we certainly can have a conversation on that specifically. I do appreciate the topic suggestion, Al, because I think I would like to do rooms like this, maybe once a month or so, and having discussions on things like that is definitely something that I would love to be able to do. I'd like to thank everybody who contributed to this special 20th edition of the Penny Forward podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this conversation about what financial professionals should know about working with blind clients and have found it educational. And if you know of a financial professional who would benefit from hearing this, please share it with them. Again, thanks for listening. And visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Until next time, from all of us in the Penny Forward community, thanks for listening.